Truth Espresso, episode 18.
Face it, we all would rather sleep in this morning. That's why God gave us espresso, to kickstart our zombified corpses into hyperdrive. And now, giving your mind and soul the morning shot of truth it craves. This is Truth Espresso with Daniel Minnick.
On June 10th, 1963, the Equal Pay Act was signed into law. This means that since June 10th, 1963, it has been illegal in the United States of America to pay men and women differently for doing the same work. So the question then is, since the Equal Pay Act is the law of the land, why is there still a gender wage gap in the United States in 2019? Why does this persist, and why isn't anyone being prosecuted? Why do we have women marching in the streets and demanding that they get equal pay and demanding to close this wage gap? Why are there not criminals being herded up and put behind bars or forced to pay a fine for violating the law? Hi, this is Daniel Minnick, and you are listening to the Truth Espresso podcast. In this episode, we are continuing a two-part series discussing the issue of the gender wage gap. If you have not listened to the last episode, I would highly recommend that you do so to get a good background, a good context for the subject matter that I'm about to present in this episode. In the last episode, we asked three questions about the gender wage gap that are usually not asked when the proponents of this gender wage gap to show that there is some kind of social injustice against women present the statistics. And so if we ask these three questions about the gender wage gap, it might make some more sense of the statistics that approximately 80 cents on every dollar that the average man earns, an average woman earns, and so we are led to wonder if that means that somehow women are doing the exact same work with the exact same experience and somehow getting paid less for this. If that is true, this episode will examine, will disaggregate some of the statistics that even the government reports about this gender wage gap and really understand, what does this all mean? Does it mean what the advocates of the gender wage gap promote, that somehow government, society has to do something to fix this so that the average man and the average woman earn the same? Or really, does it mean that there isn't a real problem and that the difference comes from choices in careers, choices in work preferences, and choices and roles that take place in the family? So let's look at this a little bit, shall we? This is really the big question. What happens when we disaggregate the statistics? These statistics could just as well not really communicate anything meaningful unless we really do a deep dive and figure out, is there anything more meaningful that we can mine from these statistics? So let's consider a few factors, a few variables, a few components of these the large aggregated statistics that count for the roughly 81.8% that women earn full-time compared to men earning full-time, according to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. So the first factor to consider is full-time. is this definition of full-time too broad to consider in these statistics? If it starts at 35 hours a week and goes up from there, should a woman who works 35 hours a week earn the same as a man working 80 hours a week at the same job? I mean, they both fall under the full-time statistic. Well, obviously, we know that that would not make sense. That would really be unjust if it's the same work and one person works 80 hours, the other works 35 hours, but if they're considered full-time, then they get the same hourly rate. So the details in the Bureau of Labor and Statistics report suggest, actually, that most of the gender earnings gap is explained by age, marital status, children, and hours worked, according to an article by Mark Perry at AEI.org. I will include this link in the show notes as well. Mark Perry really does a deep dive into this Bureau of Labor and Statistics report from 2017. He analyzes subsets to really get us to consider whether the aggregate statistics really mean what we can read into them, and whether really isolating various factors can account for the wage gap other than allegedly paying women less to do the exact same work as men. So Mark Perry cites this Bureau of Labor and Statistics report, and according to Mark Perry's analysis of the statistics, 21.5% of men actually worked 41 or more hours a week, or what we would commonly consider overtime. But yet, according to those same statistics in the BLS report, only 14.3% of women worked 41 or more hours per week. So, as we look into full-time a little deeper, let's look at Mark Perry's analysis of the BLS statistics in this report, asking the question, 60 or more hours per week, exhaustion here. 5.8% of men worked 60 or more hours a week, but only 2.5% of women worked 60 or more hours a week. So as we drill down and we increase the hours, even though these are smaller statistics here, men were over twice as likely to work 60 or more hours a week compared to women. So more hours equals more pay, even if it's at the same rate of pay. So what about overtime pay? If we chop off everything that would be overtime pay and only look at the full-time range, that's less than 40 hours a week. So we're looking at 35 to 39 hours a week. About 10.9% of women worked less than 40 hours a week, but only 4.3% of men worked less than 40 hours a week. So doesn't that tell us something about the taking one aggregate total amount and dividing it by the other aggregate total amount and assuming that women do the exact same output and yet are earning less, they're being discriminated against, they're getting paid less for the same work? Men, on average, work longer hours than women, and there's a reason for that. It's the different roles that men and women take, especially in relation to family roles. But another interesting thing that Mark Perry noted from these statistics, when he really mined down, within this bracket, the average woman working less than 40 hours a week, even though more women worked the fewer hours than men did, but compared to the men, how much they actually earned, the women out-earned the men by 7%. That's not a small percent when we're considering this wage gap here. So when it comes to working shorter hours, women actually earned more than men who worked shorter hours. So the average full-time, quote-unquote, man works about 2 hours more per week than the average full-time woman. So doesn't that count for some of the pay gap disparity? But when accounting only for up to 40 hours per week, a whole 8% is chopped off the wage gap. So time is clearly a significant factor of the gap. Most likely, if you work longer, you will make more money. Doesn't that sort of make a little bit of sense? Another factor in disaggregating the statistics beside full-time, defining what full-time is if we look at the question, is it the same work? Are we actually seeing a man and a woman standing side by side doing the exact same tasks for the exact same job description, having the exact same experience, working the exact same number of hours, and receiving a paycheck that reflects a drastically different hourly rate? Is that what this wage gap is telling us? The overly aggregated statistic allows people to assume that, but the data doesn't really reflect this. If women are really paid 20% less than men for the exact same work, let's ask ourselves to consider kind of a very obvious question. Why don't businesses employ only women? You know, it kind of begs the question, doesn't it? If the labor for the same output for men costs this much more to employ men, why don't businesses fire all the men and replace them with women to get a competitive advantage over their naive competitors who haven't really thought through this obvious point? If women were really being paid less for the exact same work, then it's a steal of a deal. It is a bargain. Businesses would be silly. They would be foolish to pay men more for the same work. Don't businesses want to cut costs? And, you know, especially a lot of businesses have razor-thin profit margins. Wouldn't it make a lot more economic sense to fire all the men, replace them with women, and save money and make more profits? But then let's consider, once businesses do this obvious thing and fire all the men, the earnings gap would close as more women would be employed and more men would be out of a job. So, if that were to happen, how would the men get hired? I mean, they need to make money too. To get a job, they would have to bargain with businesses. They would have to accept a cut in their pay to earn as much or even less than a woman to get a competitive advantage for employment. If men really were being paid more, wouldn't businesses hire a lot more women and cut costs? But then if they fire the men to pay only women, then how would men get the jobs? They would have to accept the same cut or even less to be able to get hired and work alongside the women and be able to get a job that otherwise would be granted to a woman. So even considering this question alone, it really sheds some suspicion on the wage gap. I mean, how can there be thousands, tens of thousands of businesses where this obvious question has never become apparent enough to ask? Think of the political advantage of hiring women, giving jobs to women. This would be a more woman-friendly business. They would cut costs. It's win-win. If most businesses are greedy penny pinchers, why haven't they done this yet? Why would they pay men presumably more than they're worth, or, you know, pay women less than they're worth, as we might be led to believe, if maximizing profits depends on cutting costs? The pay gap seemingly could actually be solved by greed, that a lot of progressives already assume businesses have. Or are business owners so incredibly misogynistic that they would sacrifice profits just to exercise pure misogyny? Does this even make sense at all? And to bring into the mix, what about women-owned businesses? Is the gender pay gap gone or even reversed in those firms? If not, what is making these women who own businesses misogynistic against other women? Why don't women-owned firms show up more often as role models in statistics for how to close the pay gap and operate successfully? So, is it really the same work that we're looking at? Another factor in disaggregating the statistics. Is age a factor? So, let's ask the question, what about teenagers and young 20-somethings before choices in college careers become manifest? To give a personal example, when I started working, I earned minimum wage. I am a man. You'd think if there is this disparity, this gender pay gap, the way we're supposed to understand it, I would have always been paid a certain amount more than minimum wage because I was a man, right? Because, I mean, wouldn't women have to be paid the minimum wage legally? And so if companies wanted to pay men more, wouldn't I have made more than minimum wage? But, you know, that's a side factor. As a teenager, I earned minimum wage or sometimes slightly a little bit more. So I've had my share of earning the minimum wage when it was $5.15 an hour. And I've also had jobs when I earned $6 per hour. But at those jobs, men and women earned the exact same salary because they were low-skilled jobs. According to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics report that we've been looking at in this episode, in the 16 to 24-year-old range, over 10% of this wage gap is just slashed off. If we focus on this range of youth, teenagers and college-aged kids, about half of the wage gap is cut. This doesn't account for differences even in the number of hours worked or the choices of careers and how supply and demand affects the pay for this labor. That's just considering that range, half the wage gap is gone. So obviously, when you start to increase the age range, let's look at the next factor. Does marital status contribute to the gap? According to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics report, only single workers who have never been married that are similar, you know, this is similar to the age factor. If we're only looking at single workers who have never been married, more than half the gap is gone. Because most likely a lot of people who are only single and have never been married are going to be in that age range, so there's a similar effect there. But once you factor in the effects of marital status and dependent children, over two-thirds of this wage gap is represented. The entire set of single workers, so we just looked at single workers who have never been married, but the entire set of what would be considered single workers who have no dependent children, that are children under 18 years of age, who have never been married, that or are widowed, or are separated, or are divorced, but they don't have dependent children, this reduces the wage gap by two-thirds. So marriage is a significant contributing factor in the wage gap, and I wonder if it is a result of the different roles that men and women typically take when it comes to family affairs. How does marriage affect women's wages? And how does this make sense? So number one, how does marriage affect women's wages? One, in a good relationship, the woman's income becomes more supplemental. Fewer women may be focused as much on the grind of work as on nurturing relationships, turning a house into a home, cooking for her husband, etc. As you have a young married couple, sometimes the husband gives the wife a little more leeway, a little more freedom in how, what kinds of work the wife might want. The wife might be freed up by the income of the husband to pursuing things such as part-time work, flexible hours, and things so that they can have more time to have relationships with each other, go out and travel or so on like that. So her income becomes more supplemental, and this is a good thing. I mean, do we, you know, if a man and if they're married, why would we think that the woman needs all of the income she could possibly make as if she were single? Number two factor in how marriage affects women's wages. Number two, children become the most significant factor for the wage gap. Doesn't someone have to be with younger children, especially? Some parents do both work full-time and have children in daycare or school, but the school hours still affect the work hours of a parent. At least one of the parents have to have a job that allows enough flexibility of hours so for one of the parents to be able to go and pick up the kids after school. Some mothers work part-time hours while the husband works full-time hours so that the mother can arrange her work schedule around picking up kids, sending kids to school, picking them up from school, and so on. Work flexibility still commands a lower pay and limits job choices. I mean, isn't work flexibility a perk that essentially carries a monetary value? Okay, so another factor that marital status factors into the wage gap. According to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, when isolating the whole statistics of the wage gap to just married women with dependent children compared to married men with dependent children, you know, these could be the same women and men married to each other, but married women with children under 18 compared to married men with children under 18, the gap grows slightly from the statistics that are reported. If we're just looking at that subset, the gap is greater. Married women with dependent children earn 79.2% of married men with children compared to the whole statistic of women full-time earning 81.8% of men full-time. So what do we understand from this? Children are the most significant factor in the wage gap, bar none. Children are an investment with significant upfront costs. They require a tremendous amount of time and money. That's just a fact of nature. Someone has to take care of children and train them. Someone has to earn the money to do so. Both parents need to be involved personally in their children, of course, absolutely. A husband who makes career the only factor and is basically distanced from his own children and even his wife, that is not a recipe for a healthy marriage or a healthy family. But there are different roles. The role of a man primarily is to provide, at least to make sure his income itself is primarily to provide. A married woman will likely statistically have supplemental income, if any income at all, in that case. And the woman has more of a role in taking care of the children. And while, you know, I'm not suggesting in any respect at all that the work that a mother does in caring for children is of less value or is less work than what the man does. That is not true at all. I mean, the work that a mother has to do in taking care of children, technically, if we were to put a monetary value on it, is probably worth a lot more than what the man actually gets paid. But it's kind of an underpaid and underrecognized work. But it's work that needs to be done, and that is what accounts for the largest percentage, the largest factor of the pay gap between men and women. So in conclusion, let's consider the statistics of the wage gap. What are we really asking when we want perfect equality and to close this so-called wage gap? We are assuming that men and women are all individual automatons who are alike in every way despite biological differences. We should strive for equal value as individual humans in all respects, but we cannot pretend that gender differences either do not exist or are a barrier that must be torn down. Another factor to consider when we want to force this wage gap to be closed, we are ignoring the factor of children, without which there would be no future men and women. If we don't factor in the children and their needs, they will not grow up to be mature enough to improve society, study hard, and earn their keep. I mean, children do exist, and children factor into wages and costs and work hours and flexibility. I mean, if we're going to consider this wage gap and force it closed, can't we ask the question, the political question, will somebody please think of the children? Another factor, when we try to force this wage gap closed, we don't take into account that the earth is not flat. What do I mean by that? I mean, the world is not homogeneous geographically, economically, resourcefully, so on. Many places offer more job opportunities and greater pay than others do. So the wage gap can be different in different places, different cities, different states, different countries, and it's not because of discrimination, it's because of geographical differences, availability of different jobs, and so on like that. The world is simply not homogeneous. Another factor, we assume that raw pay is the be-all, end-all of success. As was mentioned before, dollars and cents alone is not the only form of payment. Lower-paying jobs can offer flexibility or other forms of non-monetary compensation that many people, especially a lot of women, value over working long and hard for more money. Some jobs pay more because the work is harder or more dangerous. Some people do value that money. Other people value safety, having more available time or more flexible work hours or less stress. And so they're willing to take what you would factor in as a pay cut from the harder job for a more fulfilling or less stressful life. And the last factor to consider, if we really want to coerce a close to this wage gap, if we expect coercion to eliminate this gap, it will be a never-ending battle that can never be won. Individuals are unique. They have unique personalities. They are not carbon copies of each other. There is a large spectrum of personalities, and some personality traits are more concentrated among men, and other personality traits are more concentrated among women. to expect government policy to right this alleged wrong can only result in stifling the economy and contributing to poverty for both men and women. If the government were to require businesses to give long, fully paid maternity leave to women workers, in which they might have longer times than men with no work for the company, businesses would have an incentive to forego hiring women because of the risk and look to hire men in their place. Aren't businesses greedy like that? But, as we mentioned, the same greed would actually account to give us the question about the gender wage gap. If the issue of the pay gap is actually all about paying women 20% less than men for the exact same output, wouldn't the greed that would cause businesses to not hire women if they're forced to pay them the same amount total, including large maternal leaves and, you know, the risk of having to cover many months paying them for full-time work without the outcome of that work, wouldn't this greed also cause them to hire only women because they're allegedly discriminating and paying women less for the same work? Wouldn't they hire only women and put men out of work? And that would shift the pay gap in favor of women. This has been a lot of information, a lot of things to think about in this question about the gender wage gap that is a hot-button political issue. I hope this has been informative, and stay tuned for more episodes of Truth Espresso, where we look at other hot-button topics and see if we can go against the grain of conventional thought and figure out truth from untruth.
Thank you for waking up with Truth Espresso. Good morning, and God bless your day.
Hey friends, Daniel Minnick here again. If you liked waking up to this episode of Truth Espresso, I would really appreciate it if you would rate it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever application you use to listen to Truth Espresso.